And when you no longer have the fear to fuel that pain and you no longer make meaning out of that pain, which is something's wrong with me, I'm broken, I'm going to miss that baseball game, you know, none of that happens. I go, wow, I must be feeling a lot right now. And sometimes I can get to that feeling and sometimes I can't. Sometimes just acknowledging I'm having a lot of feelings, I'm full of feelings today. I better just, you know, be kind to myself and find a way to maybe talk to a friend or get out my journal or get an appointment with my therapist. So does that make sense? I just want people to understand that, like, you're never going to have, no human being is capable, like Galinsky said, no human being is capable of living a life without pain.
Mind and Fitness Podcast. It is Wednesday, October the 3rd. I am your host, Eddie Lindenstein. Thank you so much for tuning in today. You ever have that friend sometimes that you, you're waiting for a text message from? And, you know, like sometimes we like getting text messages from certain people. We hear from certain people a lot. But every once in a while, you get that text from somebody you haven't heard from in a long time. And you're like, oh, it's so nice to hear from that person. So I got a text from Nicole Sachs a few weeks ago telling me that she wanted to do an interview. Essentially, she wanted to go through some of the questions that she'd been asked on her Facebook page with some frequency here lately and kind of go through those. So we thought what we would do is a two-part podcast where we would answer the questions that were on there. So what's cool about this is it's very much interactive to the people that subscribe to her Facebook page and have some of these common questions. I think that we ran through 30 some odd questions. So this is a two-parter. You're going to hear part one today. It's going to be 45 or 50 minutes, and then we'll be back next week with another 45 or 50 minutes kind of running through some of the questions. I adore Nicole. And of course, you can find her work at thecurefortchronicpain.com. You can find her book on Amazon as well. And links to all these things are going to be in the show notes as well, in the show description. I thought what I would start with here in this very, very brief intro, and then we'll get to the interview, is how awesome of a month September was. I joked a few weeks ago, my wife was, she was like, if I ever have to hear about your podcast numbers and all of these, you know, this percentage of people from this demographic listen to the podcast. And I was like, oh, come on, it's kind of cool. So I thought maybe at least I would just give you sort of the baseline of them. So it was a little over 3,500 listens for last month in September. And that was up about 1,000 listens from the previous month, which is great. I mean, essentially what that means is that there's 250 to 300 new people that joined the podcast and started listening, which is fantastic. So it's always good to get that kind of feedback. School's back in session. I think maybe people that are parents have a little bit more regularity with their schedules now as opposed to the chaotic summer. So that could be a big part of it as well. What else did I want to talk about? I've been getting a lot of really cool DMs from people lately that are talking about, it's not cool to hear people struggling, but it is cool that people feel as if they can come to me with questions and elements of their story. There's a kid, he's 18 years old and goes to college in Ohio, who I got a message from yesterday. He was talking about all these different physical problems that he's having. It actually started because he had asked a question on a Facebook group about like a tight pec minor and scapular winging, which are two things that I dealt with in this chronic pain saga. It was dealing with those kinds of couple things. I remember, I don't know, he's maybe like the 15th or the 18th medical specialist that I saw, medical professional, was this doctor at the University of Washington, and he had attributed all these problems I was having to a tight pec minor. He said, go and find a ART person at a chiropractor office, and they'll work on this, and it'll loosen up your pec minor, and you'll be as good as new. And that was a big waste of time. And then not long after, I had a procedure done on my neck where they blamed my problems on like scapular winging, which was from a nerve impingement at the long thoracic nerve. So long story short, I've become I don't know about an expert, but somebody who's pretty versed in a lot of these different types of body parts, which is I used to think it was a blessing. I think it's more of a curse now because you kind of start to think more anatomically, which makes, of course, solving chronic pain a little bit more problematic, of course. Without further ado, here is myself and Nicole Sachs. This is part one. Again, you can find her at thecurefortchronicpain.com. I think she's one of the best in in this field. I think she's one of the brightest and the smartest people out there when it comes to chronic pain, when it comes to anything. So here's Nicole Sachs. This is the Mind and Fitness Podcast. I am your host, Eddie Lindenstein, and back with me, the celebrity of celebrities. She hasn't joined me in about a year, but Nicole Sachs is on the line. How are you, Nicole?
I'm well, Eddie.
Thanks so much for jumping on. Now, so your name is obviously well known. In fact, since the last time we talked, I've actually read your book twice. And so and I'm constantly checking out reviews and things like that on Amazon about what people have to say about it. And your Facebook page has kicked off, like your Facebook group has kicked off since the last time we talked. I guess tell me what you've been up to professionally in the last, I don't know, let's say 6 to 8 months.
Yeah, a lot is happening. It's actually really exciting for me because for quite a while I have been working sort of quietly, doing TMS, doing private practice for many years. And then when I decided to publish the book, things started to roll, kind of, you know, the rock rolling down the hill, gathering moss and gathering momentum. And so basically, I'm at the point now where I'm really interested and excited about speaking out, about telling people how to heal, about carrying the message. So the book itself, as you probably know, I rewrote the second edition in 2016, and that version of the book has really taken off and selling all over the world now. And what was most exciting, which if people are members of my Facebook group, they know, is that I guest taught this summer at the Omega Institute in upstate New York, in Rhinebeck, New York, which is an amazing mind-body-spirit retreat center that some of the most influential people throughout the world have spoken at over the years. And as a result of me guest teaching there, I got my own Omega retreat, which is going to be next July 21st through the 26th, a 5-day total transformation Omega retreat that I will be leading, and I will be bringing in the best and brightest inspirational speakers and leaders and teachers. And so I'm calling it From Chronic Pain to Celebrating Life. So that to me is the most exciting thing that's happened. But as you said, also the Facebook page blossoming, you know, almost 1,000 members now, and the YouTube channel getting a lot more subscribers and hits. So, you know, my real goal in the end of all this is just to spread the word of TMS recovery so people understand there is an option. You know, this might not be for everyone, but I can't tell you how many people I've met in my travels that said, "Oh my goodness, if I had only known this was an option, I would have done this so long ago." You know, it's not something that's common knowledge yet. So that's really my main goal.
And you're still full on private practice, right? You're not accepting any new clients.
Well, no, but that actually reminds me to share something. I am not accepting new ongoing patients because I just feel as a clinician, the patient-client, the patient-therapist relationship is just too precious to start with people and then having them expect that I could see them every week because my schedule and my life doesn't allow for that. However, I have created a new consulting practice that is available on my website. It's called One-on-One with Nicole. And what it is that people can sign up on my website, submit to me, I get back to them, we pick a time, and then they send me an unlimited history. I don't care if they send me 100 pages to read of everything that they want to share with me. So I read it, I study it, I make notes on it, and then when we have our 1-hour consult, we really hit the ground running. And I give them a total game plan specifically for them. And the feedback I've gotten, at least on the page, has been that people are just really blossoming from that. So I am doing that, but I am not taking ongoing patients, unfortunately.
Are you finding that most of these people are they from the United States, or are you getting a lot of people abroad?
All over the world. Okay. All over the world. New Zealand, Australia, Ireland, Great Britain. So, I mean, I don't speak any other languages, so it's mostly English-speaking countries, but yeah. I'm working all over the world. Yeah.
Yeah, of the messages that I get, I usually get, I don't know, somewhere between probably, at this point, probably 8 to 12 listeners that will message me once a week or maybe more than that. And there's like a, I don't want to say like a weird number, but there's a high number from Australia that I feel like have a lot of interest in this stuff, which is interesting. I don't know if it means there's a lack of resources there or if it could be. I had a guy from Australia who was on the show like 2 months ago, and he's pretty well known like in the business world down there, but I don't know, just one of the things that I was thinking about. And so you're doing some of the consulting stuff, but you still have your e-course as well, right?
Yep. It's called Freedom from Chronic Pain. And actually, if we have time today, Eddie, I know we're going to talk a lot about people's questions, but if we have time today, I will share with you about the new course I'm writing right now that I'm really excited about, called Journal Speak for Radical Acceptance, which I see as the kind of graduate work. So people who do the Freedom from Chronic Pain course are people that are really struggling day to day with symptoms that are limiting their lives. And that is an amazing opportunity for them to create a journal speak practice, relieve their symptoms. Most people that are working toward this Journal Speak for Radical Acceptance like theme are people that don't have chronic daily pain anymore, but people who are truly trying to mend their lives. So it's taking it to the next level.
I think that actually brings up a really good opportunity. So, because not everybody that listens to this has listened from the beginning. There's been a lot of new people that have come on in the last 3 or 4 months to listen to the show. But I know that a couple times, like my wife listens, and she has said to me that she felt kind of lost sometimes, like that I'm talking about things or that the guest is talking about things that she doesn't know about. So give me a quick rundown of what Journal Speak is.
Okay. So, just a really quick recap of my story, which is I suffered from terrible chronic pain from childhood. At 19 years old, I was diagnosed with severe degenerative spondylolisthesis. I was told I would never have biological children. I wouldn't be able to travel. I wouldn't be able to exercise, etc. And through my work with Dr. John Sarno, I overcame every one of those limitations. I have 3 beautiful biological children, 16, 14, and 10 now, in addition to 2 stepkids. I have lived in an unlimited life. I've traveled the world. I exercise. I do whatever I want. I still have the same looking MRI. I have no pain. I have no limitations. So that's my personal story, really condensed. And so Journal Speak is the method that I created once I worked directly with Dr. John Sarno for many years that I created to teach. Well, first of all, I created it through my own personal journey because it was born through my needing to get honest with myself and really come to the truths I needed to come to heal my own chronic pain. And it's the method by which I teach people to heal themselves, which people can learn. So if anyone's listening to this and they're curious, I have a free series on my YouTube channel, which is called The Cure for Chronic Pain with Nicole Sachs, LCSW. If you look that up on YouTube, you'll find me, or if you Google my name, Nicole Sachs, it's called Healing Yourself, Parts 1-4, completely free, and it will explain Journal Speak, and it will explain how to do this for yourself. So I guess that's good, right? So people can pause here and go do that if they need to understand that before carrying on.
Yeah. Good call. And I think that of the different materials where you've talked about it, the one that kind of resonated, I guess, with me early on, this is like, I don't know, 11 months ago, probably, or maybe even a full year ago, is when you had said like journal from the perspective of a 5-year-old. Because I think a lot of people, like, they just sort of intellectualize a lot of the writing. And to take it even further, like one of the things that I'm trying to get, because I'm doing some material for an eventual website whenever I actually get it up and running. It keeps getting asked about, but right now it's just the Facebook page. But I'm trying to find an eloquent way to explain that, like, the things that you need to write about are probably pretty dark, like darker than you could imagine, and really, like, that's part of the problem. But finding a way to say that and to not have it sound bad, or I don't know, it's tough to explain, but I like the idea of writing it from the perspective of a 5-year-old.
Do you want me to just take like a couple minutes and explain that, or do you think that's redundant?
No, I, you know what, I would say like, yeah, I mean, because a big turning point for me was almost like the so there's a great quote that I read once in a psychology journal that said, a thought murder a day keeps the psychiatrist away. And what I think that means is, like, there are these dark thoughts within everybody, and maybe they're so buried that they're unconscious and stuff, you know, like rage. Like, when I look at the definition of rage, like, rage is violent, rage is dark, rage is terrible. But I don't know if people get dark enough. And I know when I started getting darker, like, that's when my pain would really, really ease up. And so I guess, yeah, give us an explanation.
So the quick explanation for the need for Journal Speak is that, as Dr. Sarno always said, and the unconscious is timeless. So if something is stuck that happened when we were 5, 6, 7 years old, it's not just going to resolve. We need to feel that somewhere. And each of us inside, when we have feelings that trigger down to these things that happened to us, are only 5 years old. So even though I'm a grown up, I'm 46 years old and I'm raising children, when I feel like something isn't fair, when I feel like my child has treated me unfairly, I may react like a mature mom that I am because I know that that's the right thing to do. But inside, I've got a five-year-old that's saying, I hate you. You're not nice to me. This isn't fair. What you just did hurt my feelings. You know, and a lot, I'm not going to swear and carry on your beautiful podcast, but you know that it, you know, that it's not a five-year-old who's five. It's a five-year-old's feelings that are, that are partnered with my 46-year-old ability to see things from all sorts of perspectives and to get very angry and to have things be very complicated. And so what Journal Speak is an invitation to that little voice. It's sometimes a sad voice, like, oh, I just really need people to take care of me. Sometimes it's an angry voice, like I just described, where, you know, life isn't fair and I've been wronged and nobody loves me and, you know, I hate you and I don't believe in you and, you know, I don't trust you. So maybe it's that. But whatever it is, and sometimes it's terrified, you know, shaking, barely needs to be drawn out. But when we do a journal speak practice, and this is where, you know, people can go refer to my material so I don't have to explain the whole thing again. When people do a journal speak practice, they are freeing themselves of these repressed emotions that need to be felt somewhere. So if you're having chronic back pain, shoulder pain, fibromyalgia, migraine disorder, irritable bowel disease, skin disorders, anything that is chronic, it is you're feeling your feelings somewhere. Sometimes we feel things in our hearts. Sometimes we feel things in our bodies. They are absolutely, absolutely interchangeable. You know, so if you're feeling deep grief over something that you have not allowed to rise, you can feel it easily in your headaches. It's the human body processing the input that it needs to deal with every day. So that's what Journal Speak does. It gives a steam valve to that five-year-old voice that is happening whether you like it or not.
Beautiful. Okay, so I went to your Facebook page and I asked, or I told people, hey, we're going to be doing this podcast. Who has some questions? And I ended up getting back way more than I thought was going to happen. But selfishly, before I get into other people's questions, so somebody had posted something recently on one of these TMS groups. They brought up the interview that you and I had a year ago and a story that I had told about my daughter, throwing her shoe out the window. And then I didn't know about TMS yet, but I had been just like miraculously free of pain that I had been in for a long time, for, you know, 10 days or 2 weeks or something like that. And when she threw the shoe out the window, I reached down to grab it and my neck spasmed. And that was the re-entry, the re-genesis of my pain. And she said that she thinks about that a lot. And I was so flattered because not only is the interview a year old, but that she's thinking about the story that happened between me and my kid. I guess, is there a way that you could explain why that happened in that moment? Like your best guess.
Well, it's not a guess. I can tell you exactly what happened in that moment. and like I said, none of these ideas are new. This is stuff that Dr. Sarna has been talking about since the 50s, that people, you know, some people got in dribs and drabs, some people believed it, some people didn't. But if you can embrace what I'm about to say, if you can really take a breath and take a minute and make a decision to open your mind, what I'm about to say can change your life, which is, if indeed you have a reservoir, like Dr. Sarna used to call it, the reservoir of rage. I picture like a beaker, like an open science beaker, almost like a vase for flowers that lives within us, like sort of in our heart cavity. And there's a ladle that dumps into that could be daily life, which is your kid throwing her shoe out the window, your relationship with your partner, your financial situation, your dog is old, your mother is dying, right? All the sort of daily life stuff. And then there's childhood, which is all the stuff that happened to us that we've decided against processing because it's too inconvenient and it's over and we can't change it anyway. And it's our personalities, which tend to be perfectionistic, goodist. We want people to like us. We want to be approved of. We want to be seen as good people, right? We take all of those factors, and all of those factors every day take a ladle and dump it into that reservoir of rage. At the moment that reservoir of rage is threatening to tip over and that liquid, you know, just for a visual, is to pour out into our consciousness and allow us to know how angry we really are, how terrified we really are, how grief-stricken we really are over the things that fit into those three categories I just mentioned. We have a literal panic reaction through our system, our brain and our nervous system, that sends a pain signal to the body. Why? To keep us safe, to slow us down, to make us focus on our body and not our emotions. We are terrified to know how we feel about things. And that threat is seen as a greater predator than a migraine that will keep you nice and safe and in bed, the next spasm that will keep you away from this evil child that keeps throwing her shoe. You know, because she's a predator at that point. She's reminding you how frustrating it is to have a young child, how much of your autonomy has been taken away, how little choice you have over your life, how you're only getting older. I mean, need I continue?
No, I mean, I get the it's a hot button issue in the house right now, actually. But
and for every parent of young children.
Right. And so that's just something that I continuously remind myself that, you know, two kids are not easy. And that's just, you know, two kids and a job and a podcast and all that stuff is
absolutely.
And I think that a lot of people are sort of left with, okay, well, why does nobody else have these kind of issues? And I just always remind them, like, look, like, just about everybody's got something. I mean, I could, just because somebody doesn't have back pain doesn't mean they don't have anxiety or they don't have skin problems.
Oh yeah.
Absolutely. Everybody's kind of got. Michael Galinsky, when I interviewed him, he said it's really just the condition of being human. He doesn't even call it TMS anymore.
Right. I agree with that.
Okay, so let's dive into the questions. So this comes from, and I may butcher some of the names, so if you hear, you're going to hear this, but I apologize if the name is incorrect. So this is from Sonali. She had asked about the role of diet and TMS. She says that enterocolitis, irritable bowel, that they say to follow this strict non-acidic diet, and she's just wondering about essentially like the role of diet and TMS. Coke, coffee, she mentioned some of these other ones, but I guess tell me about the role of diet and TMS.
I have a very, I tread lightly on this topic. And the reason I say that is because I am not a medical doctor, nor am I a nutritionist. So I can't say, you know, with authority that you can eat anything you want and you'll be fine. Okay, so I need to put that disclaimer out there that I am not an authority on this subject. I can just speak from my experience. My experience is that everybody has a different system and we know what makes us feel good. I know what makes me feel good to eat. I know that the first thing I eat in the day has to be something with protein in it, because if I eat pure sugar, like if I sat with my kids and had donuts in the morning, I would feel like crap within 45 minutes. And I would probably get that kind of shaky feeling, that like that low blood sugar feeling. I know how my body reacts to things. We have to pay attention to our bodies. However, there's one big problem I have with people who try to solve physical problems with dietary changes, which is it has a real huge side effect of fear. If I eat this, what will happen to me? Oh my God, I did it wrong. Oh, I shouldn't have had that thing. Oh my goodness, did that have gluten in it? You know, is that a nightshade vegetable? You know, and I will tell you that in my personal experience, having worked with many hundreds of clients and thousands of people, if we count people doing my work around the globe virtually, I get the same thing a lot of times, which is I tried an elimination diet, didn't work. I tried, you know, to reduce my intake of this, this, and this. Once I started to do the TMS work and say to myself, I'm healthy, I am whole, I am good, I'm eating everything I want. So like, you know what I'm saying? I can't tell people what to do, but I can tell you from my experience, I have a client who did that full on elimination diet and now eats literally everything she wants, no symptoms after doing the TMS work.
I was talking to a friend of mine last night. He was telling me, this is before he had heard of TMS or any of that stuff, but he was talking about how back when he realizes this stuff now, but back when when he and his wife were pregnant with their first child, he developed this terrible sensitivity to gluten and to dairy. And then a couple of years ago, he said that he just had like crazy anxiety attacks, crazy panic attacks. When that all ended, he suddenly, all the sensitivities went away.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting because like there's a woman on this thread, Jenny, she says that she's interested in hearing your thoughts on diet because she's down to just two foods that she can eat.
Yes.
Because she gets reflux, headaches, dizziness, nausea, and that she's done all the tests. Nothing comes back positive.
Okay, so in a person like that, I would say with Nicole confidence. Okay, so this is my confidence. This is not because I read 100 books on dietary journals and stuff like that. I am confident that her diet probably has very little to do with the way she feels. And this is the problem. We are a cause and effect society. So we think it makes a lot of sense. You eat food, it goes into your stomach. That's probably what's causing your stomach problems. But a case in point of your friend who started with stomach issues but then got panic attacks and anxiety, you know, that can't possibly be caused because you ate too much gluten. You know, so when it moves around like that, it's a beautiful example to show us maybe you do have stomach problems. That is absolutely real. That is your symptom. But maybe, like I say on the front page of my website and like I say all the time, the pain is not in your head, but the solution is not in your body. Maybe it's not about putting different things in our body. You know, I don't ever propose that people should eat processed foods or crappy, you know, empty calories. I believe in eating whole foods. I feed my body whole foods from all the different food groups, but it has nothing to do with how I get stomach aches sometimes, and I know they have nothing to do with what I ate. It's because I'm feeling, you know, anxious about my son's happiness. And Oliver and I tend to have a little stomach ache thing that we share. So sometimes I get a stomach ache, you know, it's the way of the world.
Yeah. Okay. So why does TMS create so much fear? And this is from Kim.
Why does TMS cause so much fear? Well, I think the first thing that we need to look at is what are we defining as TMS? So why don't I maybe rephrase the question as why does pain cause us so much fear? Or why do symptoms cause us so much fear? Because TMS is, I think, sometimes, like you said, if somebody's listening to this, they might not understand the depth of the question. What I hear that question is why do physical symptoms cause us so much fear? Physical limitations cause us so much fear. Would you say that would be an accurate sort of repositioning the question? Okay. So what I would say is, listen, our body is our temple. Our body is our way of entering the world and showing up and interacting and connecting. And, you know, if we're really going to boil down this human life into one theme, I believe it's human connection. We are looking to put ourselves out there and feel that we're not alone. We're looking to engage with others. We're looking to feel loved and love. You know, really, I think that's the most basic need of a human being. And so our body is our vehicle in which to connect with others. And I think it causes a tremendous amount of very visceral fear and panic when we feel like we're not going to be able to do that, right? So what the only vehicle we have in order to bring us forth for this human need of love and connection, we're not going to be able to get it because we're limited, because we're sick, because we're unable, because we can't go there. I can't go to the thing because when I go to the thing, I get anxiety. I can't go on this trip, my back. And I think that creates a tremendous amount of fear. Would you say that would be accurate?
Yep, I think it's accurate. I think it's spot on. What about, so this is from Hilly. Can you heal when you have a fusion? They said L5-S1 or a small scoliosis in the back. I think how I would like to rephrase this is, have you had clients that you've worked with that have gone as far as having a surgery and been able to become pain-free?
Yes, a million times yes.
Okay. I figured you would say that.
Yeah. I mean, listen, do I think that our body is a beautiful, intricate puzzle that is best uncut? I do. You know, and this is not being against the surgical model. This is just me seeing through anecdotal evidence over 20 years of practice that people don't need the surgery. The surgery rarely cures the pain. And even if it does, it's, I think, a level of placebo effect because then they get a symptom somewhere else that is just as problematic or more. And so I do say that. But if you have gotten a surgery, I have one client, if anyone has taken my online course or if they choose to do so, they will meet her. Her name is Mickey. She is my client testimonial. I'm brave in lesson 12 or 13. And she had two surgeries. She had a disc surgery and a neck surgery, and she is completely symptom-free of any of those issues. And so, and I believe it was two, I could be mistaken, maybe one, but definitely had a surgery in either her neck and her spine. I've had so many clients that sometimes they melt together, but I have many clients who have altered their bodies through their best intentions and through well-meaning doctors that the symptom was not relieved, and they've relieved that through TMS work.
Awesome. Yeah, I got reconnected with my best friend from when I was a teenager recently, and I hadn't talked to him since it was probably 2008 or 2007 or something like that. And I, his sister found me on Instagram, and then him and I got reconnected, and I was just, he was talking about kind of the last few years and what's gone on. He was running on a treadmill, fell off the treadmill, set his back, started to hurt. He went to a doctor. Doctor diagnosed him with problems at L4, L5, and S1. He had two separate back surgeries, said he was worse off, you know, got addicted to opioids. Like, and I just told him, like, first of all, it seems like it was almost like meant to be that we got reconnected based on the, you know, with those circumstances. But that was a question. So thank you, Hilly, for asking that, because that's something I can have him listen to as well. So this is from Tracy. She says, I'm curious what her thoughts are on the placebo effect. I recall reading in one of Sarno's books that this isn't placebo because it lasts. When I explain TMS to people, they seem to think this is all in my head. How is it different than a placebo, though? What's the distinction that I'm missing between placebo and this TMS healing?
Well, first of all, I need to say that question in itself, Tracy, my love, you're overthinking it. We don't, so many people ask questions, and I get it. I so, so understand that we are terrified and we want to feed our intellectual database. We want to have more information because we think that information will heal us. So I need to say that. But the deal with placebo effect, to me, I think placebo effect is a scientific term that's being used out of turn in this scenario. So similar to something being psychosomatic, placebo effect and psychosomatic are two words that have alienated this work unnecessarily because they are scientific terms being proposed for a human dilemma. So the placebo effect, it's an intellectual curiosity into saying what this means. You know, as defined, the placebo effect means that you believe you are having an intervention that you are not having, and you heal because your brain believes that you are healing rather than you actually healing. And the reason I take issue with that is because what is actual healing? You know, I mean, if I have a severe degenerative spondylolisthesis in my back, I still have it. I'm telling you, you can feel it. You put your finger down my spine, you feel the dip, you feel the bump. I have no symptoms. I live a completely unlimited life. Does that mean I'm not healed because my MRI doesn't look different? You know what I'm saying? Like, what is healing? If you do this work, if there's more than one way to reach the same conclusion, so if emotions are the trigger and are the genesis of your pain and the pain goes away, to me, that's healing. If you live the rest of your life without chronic back problems, even if you have the same bulging disc on MRI, who cares? You know, I mean, Dr. Sarno used to call bulging discs a normal abnormality, that every one of us will have them eventually, if not already. And the only reason that we know about them is we have back pain that's caused from the, you know, the genesis of which is repressed emotions, that we believe a doctor, so we try to alter our body physically. So I just think that the best answer I can give to that question is don't bother with worrying about it. Do the work, operate with patience and kindness for yourself. Believe that this can help you, and you can live a life beyond your wildest dreams without having to pick apart what these scientific terms mean for you. Does that make sense?
It does. And actually, Tracy came back with a question. It was 90 seconds later, but and I think that your response will be somewhat similar, although I am curious on the second part of this. So she had said, does the game of symptom whack-a-mole ever end? Is there a point where one can be aware enough of their emotions to be cured of TMS? And when I think of like aware enough, I'm like, is there, do you do this enough times where you think about like, what am I repressing or that kind of thing to where like, you know, you don't have the kind of, like, you don't have a re-flare up because you've now become conditioned and been good enough that, like, when you get a physical symptom, you do think introspectively. So I guess, does that ever end? Can you ever consider yourself truly cured?
Absolutely. Cool. Absolutely. And it's an excellent question. Thank you, Tracy. I actually read that on the thread and thought, oh, I hope Eddie asks me that one. because actually, I just made a video on my YouTube channel called, I think it's called something like, what kind of meaning are you giving your pain? Or maybe it's called, what does it mean to be pain-free? One of those two videos, I address this. I think it's, what does it mean to be pain-free? So here's the deal that I need to tell people, because I think it will give them a lot of perspective and hope. If you do this work and you do it, you have to do it consistently and you have to push past your resistance. And sometimes it takes a while, because if it takes 30 years to walk into the forest, we're not going to walk out in 3 weeks. So, you know, just giving yourself patience and kindness. If you do this work, 100% absolutely, I believe you can be free of chronic pain. So that whack-a-mole of symptoms, which actually is a good sign, because when symptoms move around, then you can be further convinced that there's nothing structurally wrong with you. So if your back pain moves to headaches and your headaches move to anxiety, we know that the problem isn't that we need to whack the back or whack the head or whack the nervous system. We need to feel the feelings and all these symptoms will eventually go away. So chronic pain can be in the distant rearview mirror for you. However, there's no cure for human pain. So when people ask that question, it's because they're scared and they want to know, will I ever be really better? And I say the answer is an undeniable, you will be really better. Does that mean you'll never get a headache? Does that mean you'll never feel like a twinge in your back? No, because what happens to you once you get to a certain level of functioning, which is where I live every day, is that sometimes we feel things in our hearts and sometimes we feel things in our bodies. So you would never wake up in the morning and say, oh my God, if I feel sad today, that's the end of it. Something's really wrong with me if I feel sad today. Or if anything scares me today, something's a real problem. I'm back in it because I felt scared. You would never say that. But you might say, if I feel that back pain that I used to have, I'm in chronic pain again, or I'm in danger again. And what I help people understand, and this, by the way, is a really much easier concept to get when you're no longer in chronic pain. When you see the light at the end of the tunnel, you come along with me much more easily on this matter, is that if I wake up in the middle of the night and I go to the bathroom and I feel my back tight and a little achy, which, by the way, happens to me occasionally, because when you're sleeping, your subconscious runs amok and you don't always have time to have perspective on, oh, that's just an old feeling from my childhood or blah, blah, blah. So I'll feel that stiffness and that ache as I'll go to the bathroom, I'll go back to bed. And in the morning, I'll feel it or I won't. But if I do, I'll say, oh, wow, man, I must have had a lot of feelings in my sleep. I shouldn't have watched that violent TV show before I went to bed, or that character really reminded me of my dad, or, you know, whatever. Instead of thinking, oh no, something's wrong with me, I think, wow, man, I must be having a lot of feeling. I wonder what's, and maybe I'll take to my journal if it's concerning enough to me, because at this point I don't journal every day anymore, but I probably get to it 2 or 3 days a week because it makes me feel better and it gives me a better, more free life. But whatever it is, I don't have that fear. It's just pain. Sometimes we feel things in our hearts. Sometimes we feel things in our bodies. My backache might be, it's very fleeting. It's always gone by the time, 10 minutes into my day, but I see it as a feeling. And that's what happens. That's what you grow toward. When chronic pain is a distant memory, because chronic pain is not an epidemic of pain. It's an epidemic of fear. And when you no longer have the fear to fuel that pain and you no longer make meaning out of that pain, which is something's wrong with me, I'm broken, I'm going to miss that baseball game, none of that happens. I go, wow, I must be feeling a lot right now. And sometimes I can get to that feeling and sometimes I can't. Sometimes just acknowledging, I'm having a lot of feelings. I'm full of feelings today. I better just, be kind to myself and find a way to maybe talk to a friend or get out my journal or get an appointment with my therapist. So does that make sense? I just want people to understand that, you're never going to have, no human being is capable, like Galinsky said, no human being is capable of living a life without pain. That's like saying I'm going to live a life without feelings. I'm going to live a life without sadness, without regret, without, fear.
Yeah.
It's just that it flows through you. There's no meaning attached to it. When I get a headache, I'm like, oh God, I've got, I'm feeling a lot today. I'm really under a lot of pressure today. Okay. Let's see if I can get that perspective in that. Or, let's see if I could just sit with the headache and say, maybe I need to have a headache. It usually goes away within 15 minutes. If I don't need to take a pill for a headache anymore.
One of the real diamonds, I think, of what you just said, and you sort of glossed over it, maybe because it's not a big thing, because you've probably said it a million times, but have you ever seen the movie The Purge?
No, I'm scared of movies.
Okay. So the concept, like yeah. So the concept of the, I won't talk about the concept of the purge, but the purge really like, there's a part of the movie where it's like, once it hits a certain time, it's like 7 PM. The world turns into this dark, chaotic, people are running around. They're killing other people. It's horrible. So that's what I think of, like the, when you mentioned that the subconscious runs amok when you're asleep, like,
yeah,
that's what I think, right? You fall asleep and suddenly it's the purge in your mind. And I started thinking about when I was really like at the worst of my worst, I would wake up every day and I would be in the most pain ever. And I had thought, you know, then I start thinking about mattresses, or I start looking up right. and seeing like ankylosing spondylitis or all these different, arthritis in the spine, all these different things that are what, like I would just Google, back pain when you wake up in the morning, you know what I mean? And, now like knowing that it's just far more to do probably with whatever's going on in that, you know, subconscious side of me, which sometimes like we're lucky enough to have a dream and we can remember it, but oftentimes we don't. And so I'm glad that you had said that, because it is like, it's sort of the gateway into me, like sleep is almost the gateway of what is the worst of the worst of you.
Right. Cause you don't have any sort of consciousness in order to amend anything that your brain is just creating.
Yeah.
But I actually, Eddie, if I might, I think that what you just brought up is really important. So I kind of want to just use that, what you just said, and just continue the point a little bit further, which is if I wake up in the morning and I feel a little stiffness or ache in my back, I have two choices. So just picture a flowchart with a box, and now there's two options that come down from it. I have the option to do what Eddie just described, which is I'm going to Google all sorts of things that are wrong with me. I'm going to look at a mattress. Now, a mattress would be trying to alter something physically. You know, so I like to say, like I just said, the pain is not in your head, but the solution is not in your body. The mattress would be a body solution. How can I put my body on a more comfortable, more firm, more whatever? So that's one option. All right. And that takes you down one rabbit hole. And then there's the other option, which is acknowledging that sometimes we feel things that that have an emotional genesis, but we feel them in our body. Acceptance of that, which is how I wake up if I wake up with any sort of discomfort, and saying, I'm going to take, even if I can't journal at that moment, I'm going to take a look at that. Those are two completely different options. One involves the physical, one involves the psychological. I can promise you, and everyone who is listening to this, once you do this work for a little while and it starts to become something that you understand how to do and it gets a little easier, the way I just described will take your pain away nearly almost immediately, if not in short order. And the way Eddie just described, sorry, Eddie, to throw you under the bus, is a recipe for sending a signal to your nervous system, something is wrong with you, this needs to be investigated. We need to refer this to the FBI. Now, you know, let's take it deeper. Let's look deeper. There is nothing that sustains pain like putting emphasis on what more might be wrong with you. And I this is from many years of watching people find their way out. And so I needed to say that.
Yeah. For sure. I think, and for what it's worth, I love my mattress. And I remember I would think like, this is like the world's most, you know, sometimes like you go on vacation and you're craving that hotel bed because hotel beds are always so nice and so comfortable. And then like, you're like, this is way better than my bed at home. Mine's the opposite, where my bed at home is way better than any other. And during that time, I was just like, come on, like, I can't get rid of this bed. It's too comfortable. So maybe that's one of the really saving graces of the Sarno work, is I didn't have to get a new bed. I don't think my wife would have let us anyway. Okay, from Julia. Obviously, not all pain is TMS. How can you really tell? How do you know if it's a virus such as nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, or an emotional issue that's causing your symptoms?
Well, I get this question a lot, and here's what I say to people. And once again, taken right out of page from Dr. Sarno. The human body seeks to heal. There is only a limited time period for any of our systems or bones or muscle groups that what they require. And so the largest bone in our body takes 6 weeks to heal. And a virus, you know, let's be generous, 7 to 10 days. What I like to say to people is just treat your body kindly, right? I've had a virus. I got sick a couple months ago and I had a high fever and my whole body was shaking. Not for one second did I think it's TMS. You know, I took Tylenol and I laid in bed and I shivered it out and I had soup the next day. It should get better. Anything chronic, anything that continues to present a problem when logically the body should heal, is you know, I don't like to differentiate between anything and TMS. Everything is TMS, just like everything is real. So like, for example, when I get a cold, yeah, there's a TMS component. Why? Because my immune system is down. You know, I've been letting the stress get to me. I haven't been sleeping well. I've been giving away my power too much. I've been saying yes too much. So, you know, my resistance took a dip. And the next cold virus that blew in the breeze, you know, next to me that I might not have gotten the week before, I got. So it doesn't mean that we have to differentiate between the two. I think it's about removing the fear. If I have a stomach virus, it really shouldn't last more than a few days, and it should get increasingly better. You know what I mean? Like anybody who's living through any sort of a normal natural virus. And if, let's say, you have a stomach virus that doesn't go away in a few days, see a doctor. You know, I'm a big believer in see a doctor. See if you have SIBO. See if you have a bacterial infection in your intestine that you need to take an antibiotic for. Like, don't be a fool. But if after you get a clean bill of health and something is persistent and not going away, it really behooves you to look to see if maybe there is a stress / emotional genesis to your problem. Because if you look in the right direction, you can heal.
Okay, so... there is the there's a thing, the man cold, right? It's a joke, right? but I always think about like why do men seem to, is it because we're wimps, or this is really going to be a stretch, but I'm thinking like, okay, so like men, not only are we like down and out when we get a cold, like when Jenny, my wife, gets a cold, like she's taking care of the kids, she's going to work, like nothing's wrong other than she's sniffling. And for me, like, kids need to get out of my face. I need to have Netflix. I need to have, you know, 16 bottles of Gatorade, like all this kind of stuff. And, you know, are men actually getting it worse, or do men just compartmentalize stress and try to be the tough guy all the time? I don't know. I don't know. But that's just what part of it made me think of that. Okay. Jessica asks, so your pain is real. Oh, this is going to be good for you. So your pain is real. You have the x-rays, you have the MRIs, they show structural abnormalities. My question is this: how does the pain just go away and never come back? The body can't always heal from trauma or an injury. Does Nicole still get pain? Oh, this is so good. Does Nicole still get pain? Does the pain return? And the difference is you now have the tools to help you cope. I guess this brings up the point that there is no such thing as a pain-free life, but there is such a thing as a fear-free life. I know this is a repetitive topic for her, but maybe she can shed some light on this. You answered a pretty similar question earlier, but is there any other color maybe that just came to you?
Well, I want to take issue with maybe the body can't heal. Yes, it can. The body can heal. It might look differently. You know, you might have the proverbial scar, wherever, if it is on your inner structure or your outer structure, but the body can heal. And there is no such thing as a pain-free life. That's true. But like I said, you wouldn't want or expect it to be, because the human experience, you know, I had a really beautiful conversation with a consulting patient a few weeks ago, and we were laughing together because I said, the meaning of life is not to be inconvenienced. Like, I think sometimes we think the meaning of life is, oh, let me just leave me alone, let me rest. But once you rest for a long enough time that you feel rested, there is no meaning in that. That's like, you know, what you do in order to get into the meat and the beauty and the depth of life again. So life is not to be inconvenienced. Life is to thrive and to learn and to grow and to break so we can build stronger. I mean, that's the beauty of being alive. And so there's never going to be a time where you would not experience pain. I mean, to be quite honest, if I'm going to get existential for a moment, the only way we grow is through pain. The only way, you know, I mean, when I was really new in this, I remember using this metaphor often, which is the only way that an oyster grows a pearl is because it's irritated by a piece of sand inside of it. And it feels the need to put layer after layer after layer of protective coating on that sand so it becomes smooth, so it doesn't irritate it anymore. And here we have a pearl, one of the most precious natural resources that we can find, completely created by nature because there was an irritation.
Yeah. That is a good metaphor. Okay. Here's what we're going to do. So we're at about 45 minutes. I am going to cut the episode here, and then we're going to come back next week and we're going to answer the remaining questions. That sound cool to you?
That does sound cool to me, Eddie.
Awesome. And that is going to wrap up the show for this week. Again, guys, you can find Nicole's work at thecureforchronicpain.com. She also has a book available on Amazon called The Meaning of Truth. It really runs down really kind of where Nicole's whole story, but also how she ended up overcoming chronic pain herself. She struggled with some terrible diagnosis. You know, you'll never carry a kid. You have spondylolisthesis and all these terrible things. She was a colleague of Dr. John Zarno. So that's, you know, certainly that's pretty cool. So we'll be back next week with the second half of this. Again, thecureforchronicpain.com is where you can find Nicole.